This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's time to race again. This is Frida Liu. John Hagedorn from Better Trading Solutions is here for our Cultural Intelligence series. Okay. And today is intercultural communication. Now, cross-cultural communication, intercultural communication, they're the same thing, isn't it?
A lot of people will use these terms interchangeably. Yeah. All right. And when we're having our normal daily conversations, if I refer to cross-cultural or intercultural, everybody understands what they are. But within the field of cultural intelligence, these two things actually have really distinctive meanings and different practices, because we look at it this way. You cannot really understand intercultural communication until you understand cross-cultural communication, because cross-cultural communication is the comparison between two different cultures that are communicating, and it's going to be more observational, mm-hmm. whereas intercultural communication is actually the practice, the interaction. So right now, I mean, you being Malaysian, me being American, we're having intercultural communication. Mm-hmm. But if somebody were to go back and analyze this and say, okay, she said this because, and went back to the cultural values that make you communicate the way you do, that would be a cross-cultural study.
Ah.
All right. I can give you an example here. Last week, we talked about these scales, remember, to compare different cultures when you're, you know, to bring down your levels of ethnocentrism so that we don't judge, but we compare. Let's do a comparison here between the way that the Arab cultures will communicate as compared to the way the American cultures will communicate. But we'll do this from a cross-cultural perspective, and we'll use some of these scales, right? Now, last week I introduced five. Here we're going to look at two more. The first one that we're looking at is whether or not the culture is a high-context culture or a low-context culture. Now, Arab culture is very high-context, and that means that the meaning that the speaker is trying to express is going to be more in the context, the environment, than it is in the actual code, the language that's being spoken. And that means that the meaning will be more implicit, less explicit.
Read between the lines.
Exactly. And as a result, it's the listener who has to do most of the reading. So getting the message is more the listener's responsibility. Right? On the other hand, America is a very low-context culture, which means that when we speak, we make sure that the language that we use is going to be precise so that the listener understands exactly what we have to say, because the meaning for Americans is more in the code and less in the context, or more explicit. Okay? So that's going to affect the way that they communicate, looking at this scale. In addition, another scale we can look at is that Arab culture tends to be more of an oral society, where Americans tend to be more of a literate society. And that means there's more factual accuracy, right, in what you say rather than in the emotional resonance that what you say may produce. Do you know?
The essence.
The essence, exactly. The oral societies put the importance on imagery and on even the sounds in which they speak are going to have an effect on the listener, all right? And in addition, the speaker and the audience are going to be much more linked, because the listener needs to tune in to what the speaker has to say because it's more oral. Right, but now in American culture, it's more of a literate society, so the importance is going to come from the factual accuracy of the words that we use. Right, and if we use the wrong word, it's going to change the whole meaning. Whereas in Arab culture, if you say something slightly differently, the meaning is going to be different. Right, so the speaker and the audience are going to be much more detached. Oral society cultures like the Arabs are much more intuitive, whereas literate society cultures like the Americans are much more analytical in the way that they receive the meaning in the communication.
Right. What's Malaysian like? What are Malaysians like?
This is a multicultural society.
Right.
So you never really know.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
You never really know. Because when people are speaking English with you, they're using the language of a literate society. Hmm. And therefore, the language that we use is going to affect the way that they communicate, because language shapes the way that you think.
So does language shape culture, or does culture shape language?
That's a really good question. Let's think of language as a chicken and culture as an egg.
Okay.
All right. All right. No, actually, we can start with the obvious here, because how does your culture say hello? All right.
Okay.
I lived in Nepal for 2.5 years. I was a Peace Corps volunteer. And the way they say hello is, hello, where are you going?
Oh, okay.
Where are you going? Because there's no roads. People are walking all over the place. And the first thing they want to know is, where are you going? Here in Malaysia, good morning. Have you eaten? Exactly. Have you eaten? Okay. And in America, it's, hi, how are you? Mm-hmm. Now, of course, it means nothing to the Americans, because the answer is most likely going to be?
Great.
Great. Well, more likely, fine. How are you? Whereas in Japan, if you were to say, how are you, they wouldn't take that very literally. How am I? Let me explain. And then go on to, because you wanted to know. You asked me that. All right. So what I'm trying to say is that there are linguistic differences that exist throughout various cultures. Mm-hmm. But which one affects the other? All right. Let's start with culture affecting language. Within the culture, scientific innovation, political conditions are going to affect language. In the United States right now, I mean, a common buzzword is Obamacare. You know what I mean? Now that's a word in the English language, the American English language. But this is strictly because that comes right out of American culture. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And were it not for that political situation, this word would not have evolved, and therefore the culture affects the language. Culture does not only affect language in what is produced by the culture, but also what is restricted by the culture. Mm. What you can say and what you can't say. There are cultures, I'm not going to name them, where you cannot talk about politics and religion in public, openly, like that. So you're restricted by the culture. So in that way, culture affects language. But to a much greater extent, recent research is showing that language affects culture. In other words, language affects the very thoughts that you wish to express. All right? The way you think is determined by the language that you use.
Right.
Let's go to a very simple example here. Mary had a little lamb. All right?
Okay.
Mary had a little lamb. Everybody knows what this means. Everybody knows what this is. Everybody knows where it comes from. But let's take a look at how this would be interpreted. In English, I mark the tense. Mary had a little lamb, past tense. In Bahasa, there's no need to, in fact, you cannot mark the tense, right? So that when she had it is irrelevant here. If you were speaking Arabic, you would have to mark not only the tense, but you'd also have to mark the gender.
Right.
It would be different if Billy had a little lamb. We'd have to use a different form of the verb. And if we're speaking Russian, okay, we would have to mark the extent to which this verb had been completed. In other words, if Mary had the little lamb and she continued to have it, it would be one form of the verb. But if Mary had a little lamb and then she made lamb chops, it would be a different form of the verb, because then she no longer had it. Okay? And if you're speaking Turkish, you would also have to mark how you acquired the information, whether you saw Mary with her little lamb herself, or whether you heard from somebody else that Mary had a little lamb, which is true for most of us here, having read it in a book, or, you know, it's all different. It's all different, which means that the language that you're using here to describe this particular situation is going to have a profound effect on how we see, describe, and remember our experiences. In other words, the language shapes your reality.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how can ethnocentrism affect intercultural business relationships? We'll discuss that in just a moment with John Hagedorn from Better Trading Solutions. Raise Your Game, PFM 89.9. It's a Raise Your Game on Enterprise. Having a very interesting conversation here with John Hagedorn from Better Trading Solutions. His Cultural Intelligence, the series, and his intercultural communication. And early on, we were discussing about if language shaped culture, or if culture shaped language, and it was a chicken or egg situation
going on.
Now, I know you saw another point to that, but how can ethnocentrism affect intercultural business relationships?
All right. We're getting on this idea here that language affects culture, because research tends to support that more than the opposite, that culture affects language. We can find examples of culture affecting language, but language really affects culture. We were just talking now about how the language you use affects tense, and as a result, it's going to affect how you remember your experiences. Mm. Language is also going to affect things like space and time. The language that you use describes how you see space and time. An example here. Let's imagine that I've got five pictures that I have to put in sequential arrangement. And each picture is of, let's say, a girl growing up to be a woman. And you can always see that it's the same person. Now we have to put them in sequential arrangement. If we are to do this, if an American were to do this, because Americans read from left to right, we would arrange these sequentially from left to right. It would be different, however, we were looking at Arabs and Americans before, if an Arab were to do this because they read from left to right, or from right to left, rather, and therefore they would arrange these from right to left. Now, if that strikes you as different, here's something. What if your language has no concept of left and right? Okay. And you do not have a literate language read that you can read to determine how you're going to arrange these sequentially. Now, there's a tribe in Australia that does not have a word for left and right. They use absolute direction all the time, north, south, east, and west. So my left arm here could be my east arm or my west arm, depending on if I'm facing north or south. All right. People would say something like, hey, there's a bug on your west arm. Turn the other way. No, no, now it's on your east arm. All right. Depending on how you're facing. All right. So the funny thing is, research has been done with them to show how they would arrange these same five pictures. And it all depends on the direction in which they're sitting. Yeah, because if they're sitting in one direction, they will arrange them from, well, time for them is east to west, always east to west. So if they turn in a particular direction, they will still arrange them from east to west. So that would mean they could go left to right. Turn in a different direction, they'll go right to left. Turn in a different direction, they could go top to bottom, all depending on the direction in which they sit. So again, what I'm trying to show you here is that language has a profound effect on the way we think. Language shapes your reality. Now, to answer your question about ethnocentrism, if we have an expatriate from anywhere who goes into a culture to work as an executive anywhere, acquiring the host country national's language is going to be essential to really understanding how they work. And this is why it's so attractive for expatriates to come into Malaysia to work here, because people speak English, which means that when we are at work speaking English together, we are essentially thinking the same way because we're using the same language to express our thoughts and things like that. All right. If they are in a culture that does not speak English so fluently and does not have such a high proficiency level as Malaysia, let's say we go to Japan or Thailand or other countries where English is not so prevalent, widespread, then what we find is that we are not going to be able to think the same way as our host country nationals are. And this can run into three business problems. The first one is in relationships, obviously. The second one is in acceptance of business practices. And the third one is in promotion of talent. Let's go back and look at relationships here. Here in a country like Malaysia, we know that relationships are extremely important to doing business successfully. The same is true of Arabic cultures. And in many Arabic cultures, you do have a lower English language proficiency level than you have in Malaysia, for example. So if you go into an Arabic culture where people are more likely to be speaking Arabic and as a result thinking more like Arabic culture dictates, then if the perceived superiority that the expat has due to ethnocentrism, in other words, about their ways and means, if they maintain that and do not think like the locals think, then eventually it's going to spread over into the people as well, right? They do it that way, we do it this way, therefore they're like that. And then that superiority complex is going to come out, badly affecting relationships and business. The second thing I mentioned was how it's going to affect business practices. Egyptians are traditionally late for meetings. Thais do not speak up at a business meeting in the presence of an authority. All right. These are business practices that are endemic to the culture, all right, for good reason within the culture. But if you have, again, an expatriate manager who comes in and does not understand the culture, i.e. does not speak the language, all right, then we're going to have a value judgment placed on this. All right. Egyptians are always late. They're so lazy. Thais don't speak up. They're so shy and so intimidated, which is not the case. But since I cannot see any deeper than that, That's the way it's going to be. All right? If I were to learn the language and therefore pick up the culture, then I would be able to understand these behaviors better.
Right.
Because we said earlier on, the values that you have in your culture affect your outward behavior.
And I think it was something that you said just earlier before coming on air that, you know, with when expatriates come to Malaysia, Malaysians make that effort to connect with you.
Yes. And this is why, shamefully, my Bahasa is not as good as it should be after living here for 25 years. But it's because of two reasons. Number one, business English is the language of the Klang Valley. Let's face it. Everybody speaks English, right? And second, because Malaysians are so very accommodating. If I tried to speak Bahasa with a Malaysian and they understand that I'm having a hard time with it, they'll automatically switch into English to accommodate me, to make it easier for me, which is something that you don't find in some other countries, right? Where if you do speak English to them, they'll kind of like, you know, turn the shoulder on you and say, come on, you know, learn our language if you want to be in this country, right? Mm. And it's not like that at all here. And I'm using that as my excuse for not speaking Bahasa better, right? It's all the Malaysians' fault for being so accommodating. But anyway, we talked about relationships here, ethnocentrism. We talked about relationships, practices. The third thing is promotion of talent. Mm. Expatriate managers are more likely to promote people who think the same way that they do than people who do not, because they understand them. They can relate to them better. So if you have someone within the host country that is a really good English speaker, somebody who's studied in the United States or Australia, something like that, for example, these are the people that the expatriate managers are going to be more attracted to. Mm. Now, you might have someone who is within the culture who is equally or more capable than this person here, but because their English language level is lower and because we cannot communicate as successfully in English, all right, I'm going to overlook this guy in preference to this guy or this woman who speaks better. Right, because we relate better, not because they have better skill, but just because we relate better. I understand you better because our language is common. All right, and people will be overlooked as a result. And it's not the fault of the host country national. Very often, it's the fault of the manager who's coming in, who could understand things a little bit better if they were to pick up the language.
Right. So I mean, I that said, you know, so what do you do then? You know, I mean, it's so easy to just gloss over this because I connect with the guy. He seems pretty good. You know, between the two of them, you know, I'm going to hire him.
Right.
Why delve deeper?
Because for two reasons. Number one, delving deeper might be a better business decision. That's the obvious one. But the second reason is that in addition to making it a better business decision, it's also going to enable you to look at the world differently. Mm-hmm. All right. Delving deeper into this person requires learning a little bit more about this person's environment, this person's culture. And as a result, it's going to be a much more enriching experience for that manager or for that individual in the long run.
Wow. Wise words from Mr. John Hagedorn, Better Trading Solutions. But for some of you, you might be dazed and confused. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.